This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. Most of us know the dramatic impact that the 1972 education law called Title IX had on women when it prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex from any and all educational opportunities. It gave them equal opportunity in many educational endeavors, none the least of which was in the area of athletics and sports. But today, there remain some students who are still not on equal footing when it comes to athletics. And here with more on this is Dr. James Rimmer, the Lakeshore Foundation Endowed Chair in Health Promotion and Rehabilitation Sciences and the Director of the Lakeshore Foundation at the University of Alabama at Birmingham Research Collaborative. Dr. Rimmer was recently here in Central New York for a joint program co-sponsored by Upstate Medical University, SUNY Cortland, and Syracuse University to explore new paradigms for assistive technology, fitness, and disability. And he's joining us now by telephone. Welcome, Dr. Rimmer.
Welcome. Pleased to be here.
So, Dr. Rimmer, children with disabilities experience disparities in athletic opportunities in this country. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that when we look at the panoramic view of physical activity in our nation today, which includes ball fields, gyms, fitness centers, physical education classes, it's kind of a sad commentary on society that only the most skillful, athletic, strongest, with the most aerobic capacity really get to excel in sports, and many others usually drop off at some point in their childhood. But children with disabilities, they don't even get started because their obviously levels of physical activity and fitness level, strength, cardiovascular endurance is much lower than non-disabled children. And we don't really have an infrastructure in our society today to adapt programs for children with disabilities in mainstream sports and athletics.
Do you see it as a function of cost or lack of will?
I would say the latter. It's really lack of will. I do think that many parents, including myself, I raised two daughters and coached softball and basketball for many years. You get caught up in the thrill of winning and the thrill of competition, and you often don't think about the child who's on the sidelines. So we really need to do, you know, a complete overhaul in our society, at least until junior high, where all of these physical activity ecosystems, from sports programs to individualized programs like dance and maybe some sort of martial arts, can be adapted for children with disabilities so we have a greater level of inclusion. The magnitude and the impact of not participating early in life in physical activity and sports is significant. You know, there's a compelling set of research showing that children with disabilities have higher rates of poor health. They have more absenteeism from school. They have more cardiometabolic risk factors. They have higher rates of obesity. So this is starting at a very early age, and I do believe that it's incumbent upon our society to try to look at policy in terms of how we can mandate inclusion of children with disabilities in all aspects of sports and recreation.
So right now you're alluded to certain health disparities with children with disabilities. Do you think that also plays a role, though, in why? I mean, it's almost like which came first, the chicken or the egg. Do you think that the fact that they have certain health disparities or problems with health and endurance and all of that may be a factor in not providing these services or opportunities, or is it the reverse, the fact that they don't have these opportunities, that they suffer from some of these health consequences?
Again, I think it's the latter. They don't really have a tremendous amount of opportunities or access to all kinds of sports and recreation programs. Sometimes it's economic barriers, you know, dance programs, for example, where you see these little girls off to take ballet class, are not inexpensive. It might cost a family member $10, $15 a class. So if you're doing that 1 or 2 days a week, that adds up to a substantial amount of resources. Some of the community programs also cost. There are special recreation programs around the country that tailor the program to the child with a disability. They're more in isolated settings than in mainstream settings. And those are very good. You know, they're prorated based on a family's income, but they're few and far between. And so as we begin to think about how to change the paradigm of not watching children with disabilities deteriorate at a much earlier rate and stage of their life compared to non-disabled children, we have to begin to think about what are the cost barriers that may be associated with part of the reason why family members are not enrolling their children in these specialized programs that other family members who have higher socioeconomic resources can do.
What do you think the benefits specifically are for kids with disabilities that they can experience from sports activities?
It's interesting. You know, we have a body that weighs a certain amount, and we spend a lot of time on the brain, which is a very small amount of weight in comparison to the rest of the body. Learning is extremely important. Everybody knows that education is the key to a successful job in the future. But we often forget that small percentage of body weight associated with the brain. We put a tremendous amount of investment in it, you know, in terms of learning. When we look at the rest of the body, which is the other 95% of the body weight, we very often think of very little that we do in order to maintain its function. So every part of the body has to have maintenance of function. And when we look at muscles, bones, connective tissue, and organs, exercise, physical activity is an extremely important aspect of maintaining the integrity of those components.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's Health Link on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here along with Dr. James Rimmer. He's an expert in adaptive physical education, and we're talking about the disparities between kids with and without disabilities. So you were saying that we need to take care of the whole body. In addition, does it have an impact on, you mentioned earlier in the interview, on their longevity and on their overall health by having the opportunity to engage in all of these physical activities and sports? But there must be some other benefits, as there are for any normal average kid in sports. I would think kids with disabilities would benefit the same way from teamwork, from discipline, from practice, from all of those kinds of things.
Well, yeah, if you look at, you know, even the prehistoric days when we were just beginning to evolve on this earth as Homo sapiens, we all live in tribes, right? We don't isolate ourselves, and rarely when an animal or a human species isolates themselves is usually ensuing death or severe disability. But that's what we're doing technically today, is we're isolating children with disabilities from the main ecosystem and the main social fabric of childhood. So that does create a sort of slow death, because when you are not part of a social network, or you don't have a group of socially engaging members of the society, you often become isolated, and that isolation leads to deterioration of not only physical health but also mental health.
Yeah, and you mentioned things like obesity, increase in obesity, and of course that leads to all kinds of other sequelae, medical sequelae.
Yeah, as obesity is if you look at the spectrum of obesity, we know that very often minorities have higher rates of obesity. Samoans have very high rates. But when you look across the spectrum of populations that have issues with obesity, children and adults with disabilities are at the upper end of the spectrum. So they have some of the highest rates of obesity in the world.
Well, that's shocking, actually. So what's being done, or what can be done on a national level to change this? I mean, what efforts are underway that you've seen?
We're trying. You know, we have a National Center on Physical Activity and Disability, which has been funded by CDC for 13 years. So we're currently trying to develop what we call these local inclusive fitness coalitions and these local inclusive health coalitions to try to get at the core of the problem. You know, we've been working at the national level for many years trying to promote physical activity, but in this new cycle of funding that we have from CDC, we're really starting to work from the inside out rather than the outside in.
So tell me more specifically, these programs would be offered within the school day, after school, evenings? How does that work?
It's even bigger than that. We're trying to get a coalition developed that would be responsive to any issues associated with segregation.
Hmm.
Any issue.
Segregation of any type, or specifically to do with disabled?
Well, any type related to health promotion. So it could be they don't have access to the farmers markets because they're inaccessible. They can't get transportation to go to a gym. There's a soccer club that refuses to allow kids in wheelchairs to participate. Any issue would be taken upon by that coalition, and then they would receive instructions by the Central Command Center, which will be here at Lakeshore Foundation.
Or do you think you need a legislative agenda or a new law on a federal level to help expedite this?
I just think we need laws to be implemented. There are laws on the books right now that support the kind of like Title IX, the
right.
rights of youth with disabilities to participate in sports. But sports is a very small fraction of what we need in our society to help children. Some children are not going to want to participate in sports.
So you're thinking, so say more on that. So what are you thinking they need?
I think what we need is a ground swell of concerns by family members of children who have disabilities that they're not engaged in health-promoting behaviors from every sector, community, institution, organizations, schools, healthcare facilities. No one's paying attention to this pandemic issue because kids with disabilities, there's often other issues. Are they getting the right special education program?
Right.
Do they have an IEP?
Or medical needs
yeah,
sometimes.
Is their medication okay? Yeah. How is their behavior in school? So, we're not shining the light on one of the most prominent issues, which is, if you don't have a base of health, you have nothing to build on. Nothing.
And you
no matter
see,
how much schooling you get.
Right. And you see this physical activity and physical health this physical fitness, so to speak, being a huge part of this overall health concern.
It's got to be the base of the pyramid. I mean, there are many good elements of health. There's nutrition, there's, being outdoors in nature, getting away from the TV, having friends and family members to support you. But the base of it is really movement. That's how we were created as a species. We move to survive. We move to be closer to others. We move to protect ourselves. We move to hunt and gather. So we lost all of that, and, some families understand it and get their kids involved in structured sports and activities. Family members who have children with disabilities rarely do that unless there's a special recreation program available.
I want to make sure we don't run out of time. Very briefly, tell me what role technology can play, because I know you're involved in different types of adaptive technology.
Yeah, so I think what technology can do, and this is kind of a love of mine, and we've got several grants, to look at how technology can actually engage people at the local community level. So often what we see is we don't have a good mapping system that shows where there are and are not accessible programs. So we're hoping that with technology we can collect large sets of data and start to do some computer modeling, which involves adapting what we call a set of algorithms so that if a community doesn't have A, then they would get an option of B or C.
So it's an opportunity to spread the wealth, so to speak.
Yeah.
Or identify where the weaknesses are.
And the strengths.
And then spread it out more, disperse it more evenly.
Yeah, or you use them as best practices. You can't use it as an evidence-based type of medicine. But you could say, we found something in Syracuse, New York that's working really well, and we've analyzed it, and here are the core elements.
And you can model it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much. It's very, very important. It's wonderful that you're working on this agenda, and my hat's off to you. My guest has been Dr. James Rimmer, the Lakeshore Foundation Endowed Chair in Health Promotion and Rehabilitation Sciences and the Director of the Lakeshore Foundation, University of Alabama at Birmingham Research Collaborative. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.